Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty, Washington. Today is Monday, October 4th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Rights groups demand justice for 2009 stadium massacre in Guinea.
Our main concern is what is going to happen to this case. Obviously, it will be a process, but what we want to see is that the question of criminal accountability for grave crimes does not fall off the agenda.
We'll get analysis of the weekend protest in Chad, a call for Gambian opposition parties to join forces for the December 4th presidential election. Burkina Faso suspends aid work by the Norwegian Refugee Council, and Ugandan opposition parliamentarians vow to continue their boycott despite criticism by President Museveni.
We are going to keep away from the proceedings of the House until this pressure is mounted to even call off the House. We mean business, and we are adamant on the question of boycott until justice is dispensed to our colleagues.
And a Tanzania human rights defender reacts to President Samia Suluhu Hassan's recommendations. Those stories plus Samson Umali's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Years ago, on September 28, 2009, Kenyan security fired on opposition protesters in a stadium, killing more than 150 people. The protest was against Captain Musa Dadis Kamara's intention to run for president. Kamara has seized power in December 2008. A group of human rights organizations are calling on the current military junta, led by Colonel Mamadi Doumbouya, who was sworn in last Friday as head of the transitional process, to put human rights and the fight against impunity at the top of its transition administration. Elise Kepler is the associate director of the International Justice Program at the U.S.-based Human Rights Watch. She says families of the victims are demanding justice.
There had been some important steps, investigation, the end of a criminal investigation, referral of suspects for trial, and things have been relatively stagnated since then. This was a growing concern under the former president's government, President Conde, and now with the coup, there are even further questions about what will happen to this case, what the plans are. Obviously, the coup leaders have indicated that there is going to be transitional government, civilian rule. The key from our perspective is that this trial is organized and goes forward, and that would be a real signal of greater commitment to respect for law and respect for human rights going forward for this country.
But Elise, it can be said that the military junta has been holding consultations with a cross-section of Guineans. They have just taken over the government, and it has yet to even form a transitional administration.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think our main concern is, you know, what is going to happen to this case? Obviously, the trial still has last preparations to be done. Isn't going to open this week, next week. Obviously, it will be a process. But what we want to see is that the question of criminal accountability for grave crimes does not fall off the agenda, and that there's a clear plan in place with the transitional process that this trial ultimately goes forward and without undue delay. Some of the victims who survived the attack have had significant health problems. Some have died in recent years. And there is a very strong desire among the victims and their families to see a credible trial ultimately open for this case.
As you noted, these alleged killings took place in 2009. What can you tell us about exactly what the Alpha Conde government did in terms of bringing the alleged perpetrators to trial?
So quite a long time has now passed. That is deeply concerning, as I was saying. But it's important to note there was some really important progress in the earlier years after a lot of initial paralysis. The government said they were going to look into this, investigate the crimes, prosecute the alleged perpetrators. It took several years to get that off the ground. But ultimately, there was a panel of judges that did the criminal investigation. That's how it works in the civil law system. They did the instruction. And there were about a little over a dozen people charged with the crimes. And then those charges were reviewed, clearing 11 for trial. But in recent years, as Conde began to also seek the third term, we saw a real slowdown in activity. And really, at this point, the key thing is to come up with a schedule for the trial and a plan There were some improvements that were needed for the court facilities and some planning around witness protection. But really, the heart of it at this point was the political will to see this trial actually go ahead.
Elise, thank you so much. It is always nice to talk with you. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Take good care, Jim.
Elise Kepler is the Associate Director of the International Justice Program at the U.S.-based Human Rights Watch. She was speaking with us from New York. A Chadian says he thinks the police used force to disperse Saturday's protest because the government was afraid of the huge number of people who attended the protest. The civil society called the protest in the capital, N'Djamena, to show their displeasure with the Transitional Military Council's handling of the transition process. Even though the government approved the protest, organizers say the police used excessive force, including tear gas, to disband the crowds. In the Chadian capital, N'Djamena, is Clement Abaifuta, president of the Association of Victims of Hissé Habré's Crimes.
The Saturday demonstration is for the opposition. They don't agree with the system or the process going on according to the coming forum, because the opposition proposed that the forum must be open to every Chadian in the country or outside the country and the military opposition. This is why the demonstration took place yesterday, for the opposition is not in the same line of the government.
We understand, Clement, that the demonstration was authorized by the government. So what happened that there was some violence?
You know that the demonstration, firstly, was get the authorization. But all of us, we surprised that the police came and blocked the demonstration. We don't know the real or the deep reason for the pollution came and blocked the demonstration. All the population was surprised because they agree and they give the authorization for the demonstration. But they said that the line or the march supposed to be in the oversight, not this side. I think that this is the trouble between opposition and the government. For my own opinion, I think that the government was afraid, because most of the population, the biggest demonstration is the yesterday. This is the one biggest demonstration, and for my own concern, I think that the government was a little bit afraid for the issue of this demonstration. And I don't know for what reason the police used the violence against the opposition. But I can guess that, I can imagine that the government was really afraid of the number and the biggest demonstration.
Clement Abaifuta is the president of the Association of Victims of Former Chadian President Hissé Habré's Crimes. He was speaking with us from the Chadian capital, N'Djamena. A prominent Gambian opposition leader is calling on his colleagues to join him to vote incumbent President Adama Barrow out of office in the country's upcoming December 4th presidential election. Independent opposition candidate Issa Fall made the call during a political rally over the weekend. Pandere Umbai reports from Raleigh, North Carolina.
The entertainment background at Issa Fall's second major political rally since the announcement of his presidential bid. Fall is a former prosecutor with the International Criminal Court, ICC. He is also the former lead counsel of Gambia's Truth Commission.
Opposition su ko defé ñun ñet ñu def li nga xamné mo gën pour réew mi nga xamné ñaaka liggéey bi fi nekk ñu gënné ko ñu gënné fi problème ci fi nekk yépp tégguur bu
es. He says he's appealing to his colleagues in the opposition to join him to form a formidable margin to defeat President Barrow in the upcoming elections. He says the opposition should put its differences aside and promote national interests just for the sake of bailing the country from Barrow's rule. He says there is economic hardship in the country, characterized by massive unemployment. This is FARC's second major political rally since the announcement of his presidential candidacy. It describes the relationship between him and his supporters as a true love. He says his new political movement is barely 1 month old. He says despite being new in the political landscape, his support base has been increasing. He applauds Gambian youth for standing by him in his quest for the presidency. Fall notes that the coming elections is an important chapter in Gambia's democratic future. He has called on citizens to vote massively for the opposition so that a meaningful change can be achieved.
Invite other political parties,
He says after this meeting, he and his colleagues will embark on a nationwide tour to argue a case as to why Barrow should be voted out of office. He has called on Barrow to step down from power. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Batty in Washington. Today is Monday, October 4th. Burkina Faso has suspended the Norwegian Refugee Council from conducting aid work in the country, citing critical reviews given to the media, including the VOA. Henry Wilkins has more from Burkina Faso's capital, Ouagadougou.
On Friday, the Burkinabe government announced it had suspended the Norwegian Refugee Council, NRC, from carrying out humanitarian operations in the country. In a letter from the Minister for Humanitarian Affairs, Hélène Marie Laurence Ilboudo-Marchal, the government cited interviews that NRC representatives carried out with the Voice of America and the French newspaper Le Monde as its reasons for suspending the group's activities. The NRC said in a statement Friday that it is working in dialogue with the government to address any concerns they may have in order to resume respectful and collaborative relations and our humanitarian work. The NRC's earlier interviews included claims that the government has been slow to register internally displaced people, citing a group of about 500 IDPs in the city of Ouagadougou, who they said had been waiting weeks for registration and have not received aid. The NRC also made a plea to the government to allow them to step in and assist with registration. In an exclusive interview with VOA earlier this week, Bakawanye Pene Florence, a spokesman for the Ministry of Humanitarian Affairs, refuted the claims that the IDPs in Ouagadougou had not received aid. He says, going back to the point of IDP registration, as soon as they arrived at the site in Ouagadougou on the 12th of June, the team was deployed immediately and they did the enumeration process. Florent went on to explain that registration of IDPs is only carried out after they have been officially counted and some initial aid provided, including food and $100 for each family. He said the government has put in place a two-month plan for assistance for the group of IDPs. When there's an influx of IDPs, he says, you can't register them because traumatised people can't answer the questions needed to do so immediately. When the first assistance ends and there has been psychological support, the registration takes place at that time. There are 1.3 million internally displaced people in Burkina Faso, which has been embroiled in a six-year conflict between the state and armed groups linked to Islamic State and Al-Qaeda and local bandits. The UN has called it the world's fastest-growing humanitarian crisis. The government has come under criticism recently from refugee advocacy groups because of a government ban on journalists visiting official IDP sites in the country. The government says the ban is to protect the dignity of IDPs and the safety of journalists. Daouda Diallo is with the Collective Against Impunity and the Stigmatisation of Communities, a Burkinabe human rights group. In an interview with VOA, he criticised the decision to suspend the NRC. He says that on the humanitarian side, it has to be said this is a very serious decision and shows the disregard for the fate of the civilian populations that benefit from the activities of this NGO. The letter from the humanitarian minister said the country was doing its best to assist IDPs under difficult circumstances. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso.
Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni has criticized opposition legislators for boycotting parliament. The president said by doing so, the politicians are covering up for their colleagues. But opposition leaders say they will not attend any parliamentary business until their colleagues have obtained justice. Reporter Mugumi Davis Rakaringi has more from Kampala.
Last week, Thursday, John Nambeshe, Uganda opposition chief whip, addressed journalists after leading other opposition members to walk out of parliament to protest the detention of National Unity Platform legislators Alan Sewanyana and Muhammad Segirinya, who were dramatically arrested outside Chigo prison soon after being released.
We are going to keep away from the proceedings of the House until this pressure is mounted to even call off the House. We want you to watch the space. We mean business and we are adamant on the question of boycott until justice is dispensed to our colleagues.
The two MPs are facing charges for allegedly aiding and abetting terrorism, inciting violence, and the murder of over 30 people which took place in Masaka district in the southern part of the country. They had been granted bail or not be arrested by security personnel as they separately left the prison. The issue of bail application has attracted hot debate in the country after President Museveni reiterated his stance that bail should not be granted to suspects of murder, among other crimes. Asumani Basalirwa is a lawyer and an opposition politician who is also boycotting the plenary. He says the right to bail is enshrined in both local and international law principles.
We are a party to the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. All those obligations mandate us as a country to ensure that we respect the presumption of innocence and by extension we respect or uphold the right to apply for bail. So we will defend the current constitutional provision that entitle anybody accused of an offense to ensure that they apply for bail.
In his address to the nation over the weekend, President Museveni blamed legislators for boycotting the plenary.
For me, what I would do, press for, is to work expeditiously to prove either myself, if it is myself, or my colleague, if he's a member of my party, to prove him innocent. I would not be say, don't touch him. No, I would say, no. Let him or her have a quick trial so that the innocence comes out.
Ugandan constitution grants the judge the discretion to grant or not to grant bail. President Museveni has been meeting leaders from his party, the National Resistance Movement, or NRM, to discuss a way forward in the bail application debate. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakringi in Kampala, Uganda.
A Tanzanian human rights defender says most of the country's non-governmental organizations welcome President Samia Suluhu Hassan's recommendations how to lessen NGOs' financial dependence. President Suluhu Hassan told a national NGOs conference on Friday that one way to reduce dependence on foreign donors is by aligning their humanitarian missions with the government's development plans. Many NGOs ran into trouble during the late President John Magufuli's administration. Onesmo Olengurumwa is the national coordinator of the Tanzania Human Rights Defenders Coalition. He says much of what the president said was already in the five-year development plan of civil society organizations.
First of all, I would say that President Samia tried to address us very positively, and most of the things that she has actually uttered or mentioned during that particular meeting between NGOs and the president were among our prioritized agenda as human rights NGOs. So we have not seen anything strange when it comes to our own interest as NGOs or civil society in Tanzania. Because, for instance, you look at what the whole speech of our president just touched all the key areas that we previously wanted our leaders to address. And it is the first time in history to have, of course, a president of the country meeting a civil society sector. So at least we are very happy that our president, maybe because of her background, as she is outrightly said that day, that she's also from the civil society. She worked with the NGO Association of Zanzibar for almost 10 years before she joined politics.
I think a year ago, the government ordered the bank to block the Tanzania Human Rights Defenders Coalition accounts for allegedly signing contracts with donors without consulting the Treasury and or the Office of the Registrar of NGOs. Do you see the president's suggestions friendlier towards the NGO?
We are very open, and we have actually received her directives very positively, knowing that she's seeing positively, of course, without any other hidden agenda. You know, some people may even think whatever that has been mentioned by the president, maybe it's something that might undermine the independence of CSOs. But on our part, because we know her, and that particular meeting was a meeting organized for between us and the office of the president. So we believe this is a very good beginning, that at least you have a president who is meeting with NGOs and try to speak of some of the issues that we were trying to, of course, most of the time to address. For instance, out of those five issues of co-directives, our president has spoken about, for example, issues of taxes, see how civil society can be granted a charitable status so that some of the taxes issues can be sought out, because at some point, civil society have been doing a lot of activities, but being subjected to taxes without taking into consideration that the money we receive for our projects and programs in Tanzania are also taxpayers' money from other countries that have been already taxed. So that becomes like double taxation.
Onesmo Olengu Rumbian is the national coordinator of the Tanzania Human Rights Defenders Coalition. You're speaking with us from Dar es Salaam. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the 2021 London Marathon as Kenya's Jocelyn Jepkosgei won the Women's London Marathon on Sunday as Ethiopia's Cisse Lema triumphed in the men's race in the first full-scale staging of the event since the coronavirus pandemic. Bridget Kosgei, aiming to become the first woman to win three consecutive London Marathon titles since Germany's Katrin Dorey in 1994, came fourth. Jepkosgei won in a personal best of 2 hours, 17 minutes, 43 seconds, while Ethiopia's Digitu Asmero finished second in 2 hours, 17 minutes, 58 seconds, and compatriot Ashete Bikere was third in 2 hours, 18 minutes, 18 seconds. Jocelyn Jepkosgei says winning the London Marathon was a dream come true.
I'm so excited today to be the winner of London Marathon this year. Some years back, I was pacing London, so it was part of preparation. Maybe one time I'll participate in London Marathon, but it has been today, and I'm grateful for the work of today. I'm so excited to be
And now to swimming. South African swimmer Matt Sartis spearheaded an impressive effort from South African swimmers at the opening round of the four-leg FINA World Cup Series in Berlin over the weekend. The 18-year-old Olympian claimed a clean sweep of the individual medley events and claimed gold in the 200 meters freestyle, setting 2 new short course junior world records in the process. In touching the wall in 1 minute 51.45 seconds for gold in the 200 meters, Sartis bettered Japanese Daiya Seto's previous mark set 9 years ago by over a second. It also meant he broke Athens Olympic champion Darren Townsend's South African and African record of 1 minute 51.55 seconds, which was achieved in the same Berlin pool in 2009 and was then a world record. In cricket news, the lone continental slot to West Indies ICC Youth ODI Cricket World Cup 2022 continues in Kigali, Rwanda. The Ugandan Baby Cranes beat Rwanda by 100 runs. The match, interrupted by rain, saw Uganda win via the Duckworth-Lewis method as Uganda recovered from the disappointing 7-wicket defeat to Namibia on opening day. Coach Ivan of Ugandan Baby Cranes is expecting more from his side.
I think we don't want to count the chicks before they hatch, as they say. We just want to first put the wings on the board, then we can assess from that position what needs to be done.
And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, October 4th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.